Good morning, everyone. My name is Todd Cochran, and welcome to the Saturday Morning Tech Show. We're off to a little rough start here this morning. Our guest number one was having trouble hearing us. We tested the Skype line, and everything tested good. So it just seems to be the challenge is Skype always seems to be the one that throws the monkey in the monkey wrench. But I've got Rob Greenlee this morning on the bottom monitor. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing terrific. And we can't blame Skype for everything. Sorry.
Well, you know, that does happen to be my very first conversation. Well, you know, maybe Microsoft maybe Microsoft will be able to get those control issues squared away from a switching standpoint. Of course, they will be, you know, having direct access to the Windows operating system. So it should become quite the seamless experience, shouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. There you go.
You know, reaction across the net has been quite interesting, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say it's kind of a mixed bag of a lot of stuff. I think that there's some synergies that can be had for the company with Skype. So I'm upbeat and positive about it. There's certainly a lot of, you know, a lot of users like us that use it on a regular basis. And I think it brings a lot of value. So we'll see. I guess the test of time will tell.
Yeah, I think it will. I know that, you know, there's been, surprisingly, though, I don't quite understand why there has not been very much positive discussion. It just seems like everyone is saying, oh, you know, doom and gloom, Microsoft's going to ruin it. And, you know, I saw very little positive commentary. Now, the $8 billion purchase fee, this is what the third time Skype has now been purchased. I haven't quite figured out. You know, they went through a couple iterations. They got bought by eBay, then they got like bought back, or I don't know how that worked, but anyway, Skype is going to be in Microsoft hands. I don't know. I don't think there's any regulatory stuff. They just got to do the deal and get things, integrated.
Yeah, I think they do have to go through some regulatory approvals before the deal can fully go through. But yeah, I can't see that there's going to be a big roadblock to actually getting that deal signed off. But yeah, I think it'll be an interesting thing to blend into the Microsoft properties, and we'll see how it works.
Yeah, I think time will tell on that one. But we'll see. So it'll be what it'll be. Hey, what do you think about this whole Facebook busted on this Google smear campaign?
Well, I think there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that most people don't know about. So it's hard to say really whether this is a common practice, or, you know, I certainly haven't heard of this kind of practice before, but you can definitely see where there might be a motivation to do something like this.
Well, you know, here's something that was funny. I got an email. I started getting an email yesterday morning. You know, Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak have been doing the Daily Source, No Agenda, a couple times a week, largely a donation-supported show. And they have a pretty big audience. And they were on, I guess, this terror, an absolute just, they just ripped this article or ripped this topic up, down, one side, the other, talking about how the media is controlled, how big companies completely control the message. There's, you know, there's real no news reporting. And I didn't listen to the terror that they went on, but I heard they just went on and on and on. But I got this email from a PR person, and this is what I find ironic. This came, of course, here we got it, the PR people controlling. So this guy's kind of controlling me at this point. So here we got a PR guy sent me an email saying, talking about, this, and it came across, and when I read it, I was like, did Adam and John pay this guy to send this out? But anyway, here's what it said. Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak, host of No Agenda, have a field day in episode 3 of 3 discussing their take on the Facebook Burleson Mars Teller whatever that company's name is, Fiasco, you have to tune in. These guys leave nothing unsaid about Facebook hiring BM to smear Google on their privacy policies. Google is evil. Facebook is evil. PR people run the show. He goes on to say, I am a PR person. I disagree, but we can leave that discussion for another time. To listen to the full podcast, click here. And then he has a thing about no agenda and talks about the show has no advertisers and they rely on donations and for contact, this guy left his email address. So I responded back to him. I said, huh, you had them talking about someone paying someone, Facebook paying a company to smear another company. Now you're a PR person sending me an email to telling me about them smearing these folks.
Who's paying you?
So the response was, here's the very interesting response. Let me see if I can find it. He says, no, I'm a producer of the show, which means I donated. My connection is Dvorak. Okay, so he paid a donation to their show. And then so he's actually using his PR mailing list to PR something that he donated to.
Yeah, he's trying to get some edge of, you know, exposure from the whole thing, I think, is what it sounds like.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting that the PR person spinning the PR message and then using his supposedly his own PR dollars to PR his donation. So
things are always far too complicated.
Yes, they are. So anyway, no agenda. You just got a lot of promotion here. So no, Adam and John, keep doing good work over there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good show.
Yeah, I listen once in a while.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, you have to say one thing about that show. Both those guys have huge personalities.
Whew, no question about that. That's a fact, you know. And I usually listen to them when I'm flying. And actually, I'm going to be flying tonight. So I'll probably listen to them for the first hour or so that I'm actually awake in the airplane. And then usually, because their show's like 2.5 hours, people think I go long. It's oh my God, it's ridiculous. But you know, they
just turn on the recorder and those two can talk all day, I think.
They spend 30 minutes though pitching for money, but they're very successful at it. I would listen to one show and they raised like $1,800 in one show. I was like, wow, that's, you know, that pays some bills.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good show. If you haven't watched this or if you haven't listened to that show, you should definitely go check it out. It's definitely a unique one.
Yeah. Hey, someone asked in chat, he says, why does Skype not have a viable competitor? Others have good video, but not good audio. I think there's a whole bunch of applications out there that do audio and video. I don't know. I think Skype got such a foothold in that all the other ones are kind of.
Yeah, I think that there's quite a few. Actually. I mean, a lot of them are kind of built into them. I mean, a good example is MSN Messenger.
Yeah.
It has all that same kind of capability in it. That's been around for a long time.
And Amazon just introduced something too. I don't know. I think that's not Amazon, Yahoo or AOL.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I mean, these kind of clients have been around for a long time, but I would say that Skype is the granddaddy of all of them. And,
yep.
You know,
as evident of an $8 billion purchase price.
Yeah.
You know, they must be making some serious bank in order to justify that level of a purchase price. You know, there must be a lot of people using Skype. And spending a lot of money.
Yeah, I think it was only two years ago that Skype sold for around $2 billion. So,
you know, the best part of an acquisition like that going into a public company, they have to it'll be reported in the SEC filings, you know, so you'll know soon how much, you know, once it's integrated, you can look at Microsoft's report. And, if you know, they usually break stuff out by division, so you'll be able to see what that division did for revenue.
Well, yeah, because it is going to be a separate division of the company.
Right.
You know, it's going to have its own president. And, you know, I think the current CEO is going to be the president of the Skype division. But it's going to be interesting to see how the company is able to meld that in with the team that built the Windows Live the Windows Live Messenger product, which and then the internal product called Link that is doing a very similar type of a solution. So somehow all these products need to be melded together into one service, or maybe there's a, you know, two parts of this service. You know, there's a free one and maybe a paid one or something like that. I'm not quite sure what the company's going to do. I'm purely speculating, but it'll be interesting to see how it works. But clearly, I think video, you know, chat, those kind of things are still very important areas for, you know, for users online, and I can only see it getting bigger and bigger and have more users doing those kinds of things, just like kind of like what we're doing here. There's so much more that can be done that hasn't been done yet too, and I think a lot of it gets back to video quality, and I mean, clearly the audio quality is so much better than a regular telephone call. I mean, it's my own personal opinion, but I think that cell phone calls have actually gone down in audio quality over the last couple of years. I mean, I can't even stand talking on my cell phone anymore.
You know, I had someone tell me that they hooked up their landline again. And that tells you where cell phone calls have been. You know, just for those of you listening on the audio portion of the show, just as a way of disclaimer, Rob works over at Zune. And he's the Zune podcast manager over there. So so you guys know, there's probably going to be a couple of topics tonight. Rob's going to be a little bit uncomfortable in talking, and we lost a co-host, so I may have to expound a little bit. I expounded on my personal show quite a little bit, but let's talk a little bit here, Rob. One thing I was going to say is, you know, one thing I could see with the Skype purchases, it going into Xbox, going to Xbox Live and having a Skype portal there, and people being able to make calls within Xbox, I think you could see that. And I'm just thinking all the potential places where it could be. And I think it could be big.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of places it could be plugged in. And I think actually in the announcement, they actually talked about, you know, building Skype into like the Outlook product. You know, having that kind of functionality built right into your communications tool, which I think a lot of people spend most of their time in, is in products, you know, like an Outlook or, you know, or a web-based version of it or something like that.
Well, we've, the AT&T and T-Mobile were on the Hill last week, and they were talking to congressional reps going through the hearings on their merger. And the comedian turned senator from Minnesota, He took him to task. He basically said, listen, guys, you know, I remember 20 years ago, we broke you folks up. You know, we broke AT&T up because you become such a monopoly. Yeah. You know, we used to remember the days when you could talk for 3 minutes for like $10. And, when I was dating my wife and I was calling Japan, We would have timers set and actually hang up the phone, because if we didn't, we would be hammered. I mean, my phone bill was still $500 and $600 a month, and you know that was 15 years ago, and hers was the same. And so we were spending $1,000 just to talk to each other when we were dating. And you think about it now, you know, she does a Skype call to her sister, and they just leave the cameras on. So, you know, speaking of Skype again, but you know, with AT&T T-Mobile being at, what do you think their chances of getting this pushed through?
Which part are they pushing through?
Well, the AT&T T-Mobile merger.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a sketchy deal. I think it definitely is something that, reduces competition in the marketplace. I mean, I just have a hard time thinking that it wouldn't go through in reality, because I know how things work back in DC now. It's all based on, you know, who's contributing to whose campaign, right?
Yeah.
So it's, that's how a lot of decisions are being made these days. And I just have a hard time thinking that this deal isn't going to just get signed off and, you know, done. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if they do push back on it. I would actually like to see it get pushed back, but I also heard that there's a chance that if the deal doesn't happen, that that AT&T has to pay Deutsche Telekom like $3 billion or something like that. Yeah, yeah, $6 billion.
$6 billion.
If it doesn't go through.
Right. Right.
So talk about some pressure on AT&T to make sure that this thing happens.
Well, not only do they get whacked for $6 billion, the total, it's going to cost T-Mobile some money too. So there's a little bit of an offset because they have to buy spectrum and some other stuff that they have to give AT&T has to license to them. And Jeffrey said, hey, Jeffrey, if you want to jump in GNC, feel free. With the break, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens with this. But, you know, with shenanigans that are pulled at the FCC, like they have been, you know, you look at this gal.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. You've got this lady, what is her name? Meredith Baker, a former Commerce Department official who was on the FCC board, and she voted on the Comcast merger, and she is over there, got a job. Man, as a lobbyist,
no less.
I want one of those deals. Can I go and sit on the FCC and vote on the AT&T T-Mobile merger, and then a couple months after I approve the merger, let me just say, you know, oh by the way, I got a job offer. You know, there is something really, really wrong. Now, I know, go ahead.
It does make you wonder, right?
Yep. Now, when I retired from the Navy, one thing they gave me and that I had to sign was a understanding. And basically, it was a very long form, and I wasn't involved in contracts or anything like that, but it was with, you know, you're going to get, you can go to jail, you can do this. And basically, if you take a job with something directly you had your hand in with money, specifically money and contracts, and, you know, there was supposed to be a one-year cooling off period. You couldn't go to work for anything you directly had your hands in for a year. And if you did, you had to go get approval. The government had to approve your job position. You know, so there was all these rules that, and I was not a senior, and I was a senior enlisted guy, but the admirals and stuff like that, they're even higher restrictions on them because they're directly involved in the money chain. So if we have to sign something like that, saying that we can't go work for someone that we've directly had a hand into, how can this gal, they're saying it's legal. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it seems, well, the question that comes to my mind is how much of this opportunity was presented to her before she voted?
She said, oh, none. But, you know, I think, and I'm sure any emails or any little slips of paper or bags of money that she got before, in my opinion, you know, it's wrong, but that's the revolving door at the FCC and all these other places. So
that's our government working for us right there.
But it just, this one stinks so bad. And you know, when you see the New York Times actually talking about it, you know that, you know, they don't normally cover this kind of stuff. They normally just, you know, this is business as normal. Hey, we got Jeffrey Powers from Geekazine up on top. Jeffrey, can you hear me?
Hey, yes, I can.
Well, I'm glad it wasn't me. So, hey, Dennis, let's get you back on another week. I know that you are trying to figure out your hardware issues, but let's get you on a follow-on show, okay? So, Jeffrey, you just got back from Interop, yeah?
That is correct. I spent 4 days in Las Vegas. Had some fun with Interop and learned a lot about virtualization, learned a lot about what's going on in the cloud space. They made some great announcements. I went in association with HP Networking, so they announced their Flex brand, Flex Campus, Flex Network, Flex Branch. And then the biggest ridicule of the week apparently was Cisco. So and then they came out with their stuff, and a lot of people were just wondering, scratching their heads, where Cisco was going.
Not
good.
So what is Cisco not doing?
Well, with HP, what they're doing is they're realizing that they have too many departments, and they need to consolidate. They need not consolidate them, but they need to all be working on the same level, the same plane when it comes to software. Cisco's still running off of their old iOS software with little improvement. And it just seems like they're staying in the Stone Age, and they don't have anything new just yet.
Interesting.
In the back end. So.
And then not only that, canceling the flip line and everything else. So.
Yeah.
Hey, Rob, have you ever heard of Ron Conway? He's a Silicon Valley guy.
I've heard of the name before, but I'm not really familiar with who he is.
He's a angel investor in Silicon Valley, and he's quite the legend. He's raised a lot of money. He's invested in 250 companies, and there's this, it's not a pretty article over at businessinsider.com that basically is talking about him. And there's basically accusations, you know, while he's a great, he puts in a lot of money, he can be quite the tyrant at times. So people warn these folks not to publish this article about this guy. They said you'll end up getting slaughtered at some point down the road. He'll, pay back as a bitch. And, I read through this, and, they did their piece here, but what I found interesting at the bottom was the comments that were garnered. Mark Anderson, first one to respond. We've got Jim Lauterbach. We've got a bunch of different names here that I was like, whoa, these are people that I'm familiar with, and they're, that basically are making comments on this. And I thought the comments were just as good as the article. But for one thing, this guy looks like he's I'm not in Silicon Valley, and I never looked to get money from him, but it's definitely an interesting article. But I don't know if you either saw it, but I'd be curious to see if there's any fallout on Business Insider. I doubt it, but what can they do? It's a website blogger, but
I think there was some similar talk about Steve Jobs this week too.
Oh, really?
Tyrant. Yeah. Yeah, well, I heard some.
Well, we've known Steve Jobs has been a tyrant.
No, but it's just been a topic that's come up again, and I think it was triggered based on this article. The whole kind of topic, right? Of who's a tyrant in Silicon Valley,
right? So, Jeffrey, was there any talk at Interop was about the announcement by Google and the Chrome OS?
A little bit, yeah. We were watching the news as we were going, but nothing. Just small comments. Can a browser become an OS, and will it be functional?
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the questions we're all asking. But I watched the second keynote, and the more I watched. And I talked about this on my show, and I don't want to go rehash what I did there because the people that listen to both will be a little bored, but it's pretty amazing when a multi-billion-dollar company is able to take their resources, and you can see this has been a long-term vision coming back a long ways by their purchases of all the sites that are now going to integrate nicely into this, and you can see this meshing of this marching forward. And, really what they've got now is they've got Microsoft and Apple on one side of the chessboard, and they've got Google on the other, and they're going to face up for a death match. And I personally, I think it's one of those types of products that is going to grow little by little. I think it's maybe not going to make this big, huge play at the beginning, but I'll tell you what my wife said. I showed her a video and some of the functions. And you guys know that she has went hardcore, and she uses her iPad almost for everything. And she said, I want one. Order me one of those. And so that, to me, because she doesn't like complicated. She likes something she can use. But I was looking at some of the apps that they're coming out with, and pretty sophisticated apps running on a browser, which is interesting. So, Jeffrey, I'll let you go first. What's your, what do you think? Is the Chrome OS going to be, where's it going to be in a year? And are you interested in building a Chrome OS box or buying one of the notebooks?
I think it'll be great for library kiosks. I think it'll be great for information areas for people that they want limited functionality on the machine. So you'll walk into a store and they'll say, "Hey, add us on whatever, and put your email here." I think it'll be perfect there. For the traveler that just needs to get onto the internet, I suppose just for email and stuff like that. For you and me, no, not one bit. I mean, I just got the MacBook here, and I'm running a two computer system, and I'm putting more programs on as we speak. I don't see that coming through Chrome at all. I might be wrong, of course, but I don't know.
I look at what I use right now and on a daily basis, and believe it or not, I'm probably 80%, 85% web. I'm in Google Apps. I run in Flickr. I do a large amount of stuff web-based. All our controls for our company are web-based. Very rarely, except for like today when I'm running heavy hardware, doing recordings of this show and post video editing processing, do I need applications. Now, there's sometimes I do, but I look at the stuff that is open the most, and what do I have here? I've got a spreadsheet. I have a video player. I have iTunes. I have, I think I said it already, a video editor. Those are like my top five items that are opened and I'm looking at my Windows 7 start bar, and I'm sure there's programs in here I haven't used in a long time, and once in a while type usage items. So for me, and based on what I saw with the way they're going with apps, we could very easily, within a year, based upon what they released with their API, see a whole slew of new applications coming out. And with Citrix going to be providing a application where you can basically VNC into another machine and run Photoshop or run a video editing software when you need to, this is pretty, I think they've, it's going to be niche, but, Apple's going to be moving that way too. I know Microsoft is moving some stuff to the cloud to, Rob, what's your kind of initial thoughts, and how's your taste buds feel over this?
Well, I think it's really interesting because, I think what you're saying is probably entirely correct, because most people do spend most of their time in their browser. But I think currently where we are today is that people mentally have expectations, right, that are different than this. I think what people want is the potential, the capability, the other things that this doesn't really provide, and maybe it's fair to say yet. But I think most people don't really need maybe the full capability of an Apple OS or a Windows. But I think that today anyway, there's a perception that they do need that capability, that powerful computer, because really, if you look at what these computers are, is they're basically netbooks.
Right.
And I think that the perception is that, and still is, but that could change over time, is that people want, a really fast processor, they want a larger screen, they want, a hard drive to store things on. I think that there's been a lot of question marks around the reliability of cloud computing. So I think there's still, this may be the direction of the future with slates and with computing in general, but it feels like it's still not time for this. I think people would probably find it very useful, but they're also going to feel like they've been put into a box, right, that they can't expand from. There, I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's the perception that I have anyway.
I think from my perspective is it's probably a little early, but I think at the same point, you're going to have just a limited number of laptops that you can buy. You'll be able to buy mm-hmm. two. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to plug them into a bigger monitor or not. I don't know if there's a VGA out or HDMI out. So, those are some questions I have. I need to get back and look at the specs. But I look at today, I'm going to travel tonight. I know what I need to go on the road with my rig to do this show. In all honesty, there's no way I could travel with a Chromebook right now. If I was just going to the Valley to make do some meetings or some buyers and I didn't have a show to do, I might be able to get away with one of those types of devices. But at the same time, I've got my iPad with me anyway. mm-hmm. And of course you're going to have Droid and all this other stuff that's available. So whatever type of tablet you have kind of substitutes. And then when I don't want to carry the laptop with me, I roll out of this hotel with the iPad. So, I guess maybe that's way I'm looking at it, but I'm going to buy one just to get a feel for what this thing is capable of doing.
I think you hit you hit it right there. It's the iPad. I was talking with somebody about it earlier this week. It's everybody's now getting the iPad 2, the iPad 1, which is still a decent price, but 2 to 3 years down the road, that iPad 1 is going to be your coffee table iPad, where if the screen breaks, it's not a big deal. I'll go up on eBay and for $50 get another iPad 1 or iPad 2, that'll be my break machine. So everybody that wants to have maybe the tactile feel in a Chrome, they'll get a Chromebook, but for the most part, you'll have a tablet. You could hook up a Bluetooth keyboard to that and work from there. So I see this as an exception to the rule. Should Chromebook think about a netbook or a tablet? I'd say the tablet, but maybe that's down the road.
Let me play the video here for what they put together and put on the web for those that haven't seen it. Let me go ahead and play this and we can comment it after it.
This is a laptop. This is a computer. This has the web. That's weird. Okay, so it's the web. There are no programs. So there's nothing to start up. Then how do I do stuff? There's no messy desktop. So no rolling hills of green. Can I use it anywhere? On a unicycle? My calendars, emails, documents. Everything can be saved to the web. That's crazy. So I could throw this thing into a river, and I won't lose my stuff? It doesn't need virus protection. What about annoying updates? Or patches? Or patches for the patches? So it gets better in real time. I wonder if people are ready for this. It's kind of a new thought.
I wish I had that creative team. I wish I had that kind of money to build something like that. But they make a compelling argument. No virus protection. Now, not to say that I think that the machine is still going to be, susceptible because of it's already been proven that there's malware hacks for GNU. So, I don't know.
Well, and as they sell more of them, it's going to be a bigger target, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
just like Mac has become a bigger target.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, like it's, you know, with their Chrome install base of Chrome users and with this Chrome store, I don't know, what's Microsoft going to do or what's Apple going to do to respond? That's the question.
There's two things that I still don't like about Google and Chrome, and that's one or the Chromebook. One is it said it updates all the time, and if you put your a program out on the web, you want to have some stability in the browser, or else if they change a piece of code, all of a sudden your web page doesn't work correctly or stuff like that. I see that all the time. Good example being Delicious. Whenever I go into Delicious, I use the toolbar and choose the bookmark, and put the bookmark up to put in all the code or all the tags. When I close that bookmark window, it's supposed to close the window. Well, every now and then when Google updates, that window doesn't close anymore, and then all of a sudden you've got to manually close the window. It's a small little caveat, but it shows that there are programs that rely on certain functionality, and if they change the certain functionality, then they don't work properly anymore. And then simply the second thing is we don't have internet everywhere.
That's true.
You have internet in your house. You have internet in the coffee shop. You have to pay for your internet at the airport. And you have to pay for your internet in certain hotel rooms.
But
so are we going to put a 3G into it, a 4G into it?
It comes. Pay for that. It comes with 3G, and you get a free 100 megs every month. So yeah, it's not much. I can burn that 100 megs up in a day, but at least you get a free 100 megs.
Yeah, I think that the reality of this at this point is that I think most people are going to feel comfortable with some sort of a personal storage and the cloud, I think, is the solution. I think Google has gone totally to the cloud here.
Yep.
And I think that the real long-term solution, I know that this is the direction that Microsoft is going, is more of a localized storage as well as cloud kind of relationship. So because it's really funny, I was thinking about this the other day, it's like hard drive storage is really getting cheap now, right?
Yep.
So I mean, you can have terabytes of storage easily for $100 or something like that.
I bought a 2 terabyte drive for $94. Yep.
But on the other side of the fence, and I'm kind of thinking, it seems like that the industry is moving more towards the SSD stuff, right? So yeah, I think I heard in the news here that the prices on the SSD drives are going to be coming down pretty dramatically over the next couple of years. So, and that's going to reduce everybody's storage, but it's also going to make for faster access. So I'm a little bit on the fence about, if you look into the future, right, is storage going to become less important? It's more about speed, right? Which would force things more up to the cloud. But I also think that the wireless networks need to get a whole lot better and faster. And this tiered kind of pricing and limits that we have on wireless broadband is all going to get in the way of this, right? Something's going to have to give at some point, right? I mean, are we going to want to have our photos and our stuff stored locally and some subset of that stored in the cloud? Or are we going to just say, okay, the wireless connections and the speed that we have will enable us to just keep everything up in the cloud? But do we really want to do it? Do we feel that our privacy is going to be protected storing everything up in the cloud and some corporate network? So, you know, I think that there's these issues that I think that we need to figure out as we move into these new paradigms of usage models, you know, with our computers. And I just don't think we have that stuff figured out yet. And I think Google is plowing a new direction here. And I think, what Microsoft is doing is plowing kind of a new direction with this too, which is more of a hybrid. And Apple, I don't really see them doing much at all with cloud stuff. So I think it's an interesting kind of comparison if you look at it that way.
Now, one thing I saw, Rob, was there's two pieces I want to respond to. Talking about the, and Jeffrey too, the connectivity piece. There's an article that came out earlier in the week that basically said that there's no way in available airspace and basically RF spectrum that there's no way that the phone companies or the mobile companies can keep up with the demand. It's just it's not going to happen. They're going to there's not enough. And so number one, that's why they're putting in bandwidth restrictions, because they know they're ultimately going to run out of airspace. They say the second thing that they're going to, well, they're going to have to get better on the technology. That's the only way that's going to save them. Number two, they're saying that FEM2 cells are probably going to be the thing that's going to, it's going to be the thing that's going to carry them for the next five to 10 years. So, you know, we had, just hired a sales manager last month, got her a phone. She picked an iPhone on AT&T. She'd been on a Verizon BlackBerry with her previous company, and she was just appalled at how bad the connectivity was. And she can't hardly make a phone call, even though she got great bars. She's on a conversation, boom, it drops. So, you know, we've had to do some additional stuff so that she has a good just the ability to make phone calls and not get disconnected, no matter where she's at. So it's, that's one part of it too, is I think you're right. You know, if I put up all my pictures, number one, I don't want to pay the reoccurring monthly storage fee, cause I've got 150 gigs of pictures. And while I do have them up as a place for, to be backed up on Amazon S3, I don't have, but you know, a couple hundred or maybe 500, on Flickr, because I just don't share public photos that much. And so you're right. How much of it's going to be here? How much is going to be on the cloud? I think it's a hybrid, and I don't think most of us are willing to go cold turkey to the cloud, at least yet.
Yeah, and realistically, how do you get that data even up to the cloud? I mean,
upload it.
I mean, your computer's going to have to be constantly uploading stuff to servers up in the cloud. I mean, if you've got terabytes of data and you take a lot of pictures and you make a lot of videos, your bandwidth connections is going to be constantly streaming up to these servers. And it's like, you know, and but they're going to put bandwidth caps on us? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Plus, also the limitations of upload speed is still there.
Right? Yep.
So,
and here in this, like in this house, my wife's like, we're doing a annual budget review, and she's like, why are you paying for three internet connections? And I'm like, baby, I need the speed. And we're out of bandwidth here in this house, and I have a commercial broadband that we're pushing this stream to. I have a DSL connection, which you guys are coming in on. I have another Clear connection that we kind of use kind of as a fallback, and then I've got two EVDO cards when I travel. So, you know, I'm paying for five, I'm paying, you know, $300 a month for internet, and it's still crap, you know? And, so it's ridiculous. And two of those are bandwidth capped.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's change subjects a little bit here, because we could probably talk about this all day. I know I was pretty excited about it, but let's talk about an article, our company called iFlow Reader. Actually, that's not the name of the company. It's the company is Beam It Down Software. They put out a blog post, and I'll read this for you. Thank you for being one of our valued customers. We're writing today to make a very sad announcement. Beam It Down Software and iFlow Reader cease operations May 31st. We obviously do not want to do this, but Apple has made it completely impossible for anyone but Apple to make a profit selling contemporary ebooks on any iOS device. We cannot survive selling ebooks at a loss, so we're forced to go out of business. We bet everything on Apple and iOS, and then Apple killed us by changing the rules in the middle of the game. This is a sad day for innovation. So basically, that 30% cut rule, where they have all these folks have to go through the Apple commerce system to process payments, did this company in. So we've talked about this many, 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 many times on this show and other shows. But once again, the walled garden is is taking another company down. And iFlow Reader, we covered them at CES. And, you know, they've had a lot of money invested, and they're done. Because, you know, basically, you know, they said that in their write-up here that Apple changed the rules in the middle of the game. We've got another word for that, but it's probably not politically correct to say it on the show. But are more companies in risk of, could this happen on Android? Could this happen on Windows Phone 7? Could this happen, you know, with these walled gardens? Are we going to see more of this consolidation and, you know, control on the money flow?
Well, I think it's a natural part of business. I mean, unfortunately, these things happen, you know, as companies compete and get into new markets. And I think, I mean, it's not right, you know, and I think it can be, you know, it can damage people's lives and those kind of things. But also, that is the risks of business. I hate to say it.
You know, one thing that we've been looking at is trying to determine how to continue to sustain the growth of the, I guess for a better word, the apps that we have. Because it's, you know, a huge overhead to maintain those. And just look at what we went through with a vendor that we are finally in the final stages of getting an app approved. And it's been a 6 to 9 month process to get on their device at significant amount of money. And then do I just give our content creators access to that? Or do I say, okay, the price of being on this device is you're going to have to accept a pre-roll in front of your content. As price to be on here, you have to pay a monthly subscription fee to be on there. Especially for, you know, individuals that we work with that have never agreed to add advertising in their shows. So, you know, we're faced with the same type of a dilemma. And the 30% levy that Apple did seems pretty high considering what the 5% that they're going to be taking over on the Android market. You know, 5 or 10% I think is acceptable to most people, but 30% was huge. And we talked about this before, but Jeffrey, what's your thoughts?
I think that they are so unfocused and they're blaming Apple.
Well,
I don't like this at all. I really don't. I mean, think about this. It's an e-reader. An e-reader can be put on an Apple device. An e-reader can be put on an Android device.
Right.
An e-reader can be put on a Microsoft device. How come there isn't a e-reader company that's putting books on your TV yet through Roku or through Boxy just yet? I think they're very unfocused, and I think that they don't have a plan or the right business plan. They haven't focused their business plan. So they're just saying, oh, Apple ruined it for us.
Well, they say right in here they bet the farm on Apple, and that's, you know, that's the risk you take in putting all your apples in one basket.
I think that brings up a very good point, is that really nowadays the key to success is you got to be on all the platforms.
Right.
You can't put all your eggs into one bucket.
Yeah.
You have to spread them around. It's the same thing with podcasting. The same with anything really online is it's all about syndication. Go to where the users are.
Well, I go ahead.
My video show, when I do my video shows go up on Roku, they go up on Boxy, they go up on Vodpod, they go up on YouTube, they go up on, you know, there's a distribution network right there that goes back and forth. And the numbers show that the more you saturate, the more places that people can go to get it, because they're not everybody's got an iPad. Not everybody's got an iPhone. Not everybody loves Apple. Not everybody loves Microsoft, for that matter. They want to get their stuff on their device. And if you've got tunnel vision like that, then yeah, you should go out of business, period.
One thing that, you know, the model that I'm taking right now is any glass, anytime, any place. And that's really what it boils down to. Is really, it's all about the glass and where they're watching stuff. We just launched last week our Blueberry app on the Android market. This is our first mobile app, and it's a version 1. So far, it's doing okay. We're going to rebrand it and put the other networks out too in short order. But, you know, we really decided to go with the Android first, and there was a dual strategy there. Strategy one was make sure that we're Android ready so that we can be Google TV ready. And we made a good bet because the new Google TV is going to be running on Android Honeycomb. And all we got to do really is rescale the app, put some new graphics in it, and we'll be ready for this baby to be on Google TV. So I'm pretty excited about that from a content creator standpoint. I think, you know, Google blew it on round one, and I think they figured out way too late that they should have had the developers on board and the apps on board from day one. Now, the question is, will Apple TV follow? And will Xbox follow with Xbox Live? You know, will there be more choices? We've got a project going on now that's going to move us into a whole bunch of devices in a hurry. I would say within about, well, I won't say it's a timeline because third parties doing the development work for us. But I think we're at a point now where we just, you know, we have to finish out our build on all the devices. Now, Rob and Jeffrey, is everything moving to apps? Will Apple TV move to apps? And is that going to be available, or is that getting into, again, their financial ecosystem where there's nothing it gives back to, you know, the shareholders want incremental increases in revenue, and they don't like to see companies that aren't moving forward. So do we see that coming on Xbox? Do we see that coming on Apple TV?
Well, I can just say generally that it appears that that's apps are the direction that the overall, you know, industry is moving towards. Whether or not that happens on the console platforms remains to be seen, but it appears that that's kind of the model of the future, right?
Go ahead.
It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I think the whole app model does kind of bring up a bigger topic for me as I think about it is silos.
Yeah.
Right. If you think about cable television today, there's like 400 channels, right?
Yeah.
Most people actually, you know, only watch, you know, maybe a handful of channels. So this concept, you know, of an a la carte kind of a selection starts to make a little bit of sense as you think about it. But it also means that people are going in and out of apps all the time.
Yeah.
So I think it presents another challenge, right? Of how do you pull those app experiences together in kind of a unified way? But I don't know. I think a lot of this stuff is a little bit up in the air. If you think about how the Windows phone platform works, is it tries to take these apps and pull them into, you know, one kind of landing page experience that, you know, enables you to have one leap off point that goes into various apps.
Right.
Instead of having to go into each app separately. So that's a model that Microsoft is trying to pioneer with the Windows Phone. And I think it might be a winner over the long run as more and more apps become the model. Is, you know, people like to have some integration, right? And to have common pathways into things. And a lot of these platforms don't really have that yet.
One thing that we did is we built, even though we could have done something a little different with the apps, we tried to make the menu functionality the same as our TV apps so that the user experience would be about, you know, they'd get in, they wouldn't be confused. They wouldn't have to learn something new. You know, our menu system's pretty basic as it is. But at the same point, we tried to really, you know, get it so that user experience was the same from device to device to device. And I think that's a big part of it. So, Jeffrey, I don't know. Do you think this is going to make Apple TV move off dead center? And, you know, they had over 3 million installed devices already. Do you think they're going to move into bringing the App Store to Apple TV?
It's only inevitable. I mean, they have app stores on everything now. I going through this MacBook, I went through the Mac App Store to see what I could get, what I couldn't get. It just makes sense that if you can put the program on it, why not put the program on your device? So,
well, it's a fun time to be watching this stuff. This is like news fodder for the next 5 years. You know, this is not going to end, and it's going to be cool. We'll see where it all leads. That's for sure. Now, on a bigger note, you know, they talk about blogging and everything else being dead because everyone's doing social media. But over in Pingdom.com, they're reporting that WordPress is about to hit the 20 million blog level. I don't know how many of those are really active blogs. How many of them are actually dead? But 19,855,000 is the counter. But if you look at it, Tumblr is just a little bit behind at about 18.4 million. I don't know. I guess I should check out Tumblr. I guess it's pretty popular, but, it amazes me that WordPress.com is, I thought they had more bloggers than that already, but, they're about ready to bust through 20 million, at least in the self-hosted from Automattic.
That's a lot of blogs.
That's a lot. And a lot of junk in there. I think there's probably a couple of junk ones in there for me, so you can lower that number a couple of times. So I think we've all set up a few junk ones before, but
and on that topic, I guess this past week there was a big failure of blogger.com was
right
down for like 20 hours or something like that.
Yeah, Matt, you got that right here. Blogger's back. They were down for 20.5 hours. So again, and of course, Amazon 2 weeks before had their huge outage. And so Blogger's cloud, everything's cloud, really, if you think about what they're doing. You've got, you know, to me, anything in the cloud is a server off sitting somewhere, you know? And
Well, I would guess that that now that everybody's going to a walled garden, that bloggers would become more valuable because then they can pretty much re-report into those people that don't want to get into walled gardens, such as New York Times and stuff like that.
Well, that was something that Fortune just did last week. They did a test. They did that. It was at Steve Jobs' expose, and they released just the first two paragraphs, then made the rest of it available behind the paywall. A week later, they made more of the article available. They were doing a test to see how many people could be driven in from third-party sites and actually buy a subscription to Fortune. So it was a little social media test they did on a specific article that they knew was going to drive big traffic. Now, I haven't seen the final report on that. But, we might end up being the folks that are being used to drive revenue. We got to figure out how to get them to spend revenue with us and not spend revenue with Fortune. That's the key. Let's talk just a little bit about this thing going through Congress right now. And this is serious business here. And I'll go over to the TechDirt article. There's this new Protect IP Act that they're trying to ramrod through. And senators have basically put together, and this is some heavy hitters, have decided that the federal government should have the ability to come in and basically tell ISPs, you have to block access to the Pirate Bay. You have to block access to geeknewscentral.com. You have to block access to whatever site that they tell them to. This Protect IP Act is supposedly to protect companies like Gucci and Louis Vuitton, where people are out selling materials that they are not allowed to sell. But the guts of this thing is pretty scary. Now, here's the heavy hitters that are on this bill. Patrick Leahy, Orrin Hatch, Chuck Schumer, Dianne Feinstein, Sheldon Whitehouse, Lindsey Graham, Herb Knoll, Chris Coons, Richard Blumenthal, Al Franken, John Cornyn, Chris Coons are all senators that are on, that sponsored this thing. And, you know, it's first of all, what happened to the days of, if you're doing something illegal, on the net. What happened to the days where you were served an injunction, you had to go to court, you had to prove yourself that you were innocent? You had to prove, they had to prove that you were guilty. What happened about this? What happened about being innocent until proven guilty? I think we forgot all about that tenet in the Constitution.
I think it's the concept, what they call due course.
Yeah. You know, what point have we? What is it? You're innocent before proved guilty. You're innocent until proven guilty. It doesn't exist.
It's now innocent until public opinion,
or guilty until proven innocent.
Well, the fact that you end up. What do? You have a problem. And I saw it on Facebook. Somebody had a problem. They couldn't. They were having a legal issue. They went to Facebook and the first thing they did is, we need you guys to come petition for us so we can get this to go and be a part of that. A lot of companies they'll start to do something and they'll send a cease and desist letter or something like that, and then all of a sudden that person will put it up on the web and they'll get like a million people to follow them, and all of a sudden there's public opinion that's involved, and so lawyers will try to assess whether this is something that they want to pursue or they want to hold back for now. And go from there. Eventually, I suppose due process will finally kick in, and due process will kick in if it's something majorly illegal.
You don't have due process in this. There is no due process. ICE takes your site down. ICE tells the ISPs, block your site. You have no due process. You get taken down. Your site goes down until you go to the government and battle them for how many of your months or weeks it takes to get your site back online. But they're actually they're going to tell ISPs to block access to websites. Due process.
Yeah, I mean, we're slowly losing our constitutional rights. There's no question. I mean, I think, you know, the Patriot Act and this whole war on terror has given the government license to start taking away rights. If you look at all around us, I mean, I found out last week that you have to be approved by Homeland Security in order to buy a new car.
Huh?
Yeah.
What? Really? You know,
yeah. I'm about to get my Nissan Leaf, and I talked to my dealer, and he told me that before I can actually buy that car, I have to be run through a background check through some process that they have through Homeland Security. And what he told me is that the reason for that is that the U.S. government has decided that that you have to be run through this system in order to see if you're a terrorist or on a watch list, because they don't want to allow potential terrorists to buy new cars.
So are they going to start doing that when we do rentals now? Are they going to start doing, okay, sir, I've got your rental information here. By the way, I need your social security number so we can run your background check to see if you're allowed to rent something.
And I also heard that, you know, it's a new, I don't know if it's a new law, but you have to be run through a screen through the Homeland Security folks even to get a new job now.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, I know that when we hire someone, there's that I-9 form that you have to fill that out and do two or three forms of ID, and that has to go through and we have to submit that to someone. But I knew that, I think it's the I-9 form is the actual form. But you look at what they've done in this ACTA, the supposed thing is supposed to be a treaty, but the White House is saying it's not a treaty. That particular act, a trade agreement, which is all about copyright. It's strictly a copyright trade agreement. And don't get me wrong. If some site's doing something illegal, they're doing something illegal. But at the same point, they're doing something illegal, then I think the federal government should be required to go through the normal process that they would go through, you know, get their get their warrants, do the seizure through a warrant, go in, get the charge to people when they have, like, you know, build their case, charge the person, that, and then you go through the process. Not just all of a sudden you wake up one morning and your site's blocked. So the question is, or has been taken away, and you have received no notice and no warrant has been served on you. At least before, with a warrant, a judge would say, oh yeah, you've got probable cause to go in here and seize this. But things are changing. And I basically told the folks on my other show, I said, you need to pay attention to this. You need to call your congressman. You need to, you know, voice your opinion, whether or not you think this is right or not. And, you know, what are they going to do? They get a new site that they don't like, and now they're going to be able to take a new site down. Now I'm taking this to the extreme, obviously, but you got freedom of speech issues. It's huge.
Yeah. It's not a big, step to move to that level from where we're at right now.
No.
That's the scary part.
And I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist. I know that generally the government does, you know, I think they try to do a good job. You've got real people that are doing those jobs. But what you have, sadly, is you have legislation that gets through that gets abused by individuals that have different agendas. You know, if it was pure and straight line, there would be no problems because, you know, there would be things that could be done within the current laws that we'd get rid of, you know, stuff that shouldn't be, you know, something that's illegal, and there would be a process to it. But it's just so open to abuse. You look at the DMCA process. I just give you an idea. We got a request by someone recently to take a topic down on blueberry.com, and we're not going to take the topic down because it wasn't a copyright infringement. It was just someone had done an interview and they didn't want the interview online anymore. It said you have to go back to the content creator and ask them to remove that episode if you want it removed. But we don't take stuff down because you said something in an interview that you wanted removed. And if you think there's a copyright violation or your name is being used illegally or something, some material that you created, then file us a DMCA notice and we will respond to that, send that over, you know, go through the typical process. But, you know, here we have that, and there really isn't a DMCA case, in my personal opinion, on what this individual wanted to remove. But, you know, people all the time are trying to get stuff taken down. And if it's a true copyright violation, well, that's a different issue, you know, but they still have to go through the, because we don't control the content on the site. We're aggregators, for God's sakes. But anyway, it's funny how folks, they just blast you because they think you're wrong. Let's move topics here, something a little lighter. And it's really not that much lighter. Small independent developers are being targeted with lawsuits over in-app purchase patents. So a bunch of small app developers have received lawsuit notifications because they have the ability to do a purchase within an app through a single touch, which someone supposedly has a patent on. And so now you're subscribing and or trying to sell something in an app could be target to a patent violation. And they went after the small guys instead of going after Apple. So do you think Apple's going to step in and help these folks? Have you heard about this?
No, I hadn't heard that.
It's made the news.
So is it the one-click buy functionality that the Amazon folks have? Is that what it is?
No, this is essentially... The folks are saying the use of the in-app purchasing. I'm getting some feedback. The use of the in-app purchasing is the target of the lawsuit, and a third-party company says they have the patent that says this is ours. You can't take the license from us.
Wow.
So this is going to affect everyone on all platforms, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so. There's a lot of people that would have to be sued.
A lot. And I'm sure what they're going to try to do is they're just going to, it's going to be a money play. And
it's easier for them to go after smaller players than bigger players, because the bigger players have more money to fight it. So it's a lot easier, you know, for them to squeeze some money out of a medium-sized company than a big company.
Here's the thing that's up against them, too. So iOS developers are being threatened by this company called Lodsys for using Apple intellectual property under license from Apple in such a fashion that they cannot even settle without violating the iOS developer program license. They can't legally agree that the Apple in-purchase API violates Lodsys patents, and no matter what, there's no way Apple would give permission for such a settlement due to the chilling effects it would have on iOS development in general. And so I don't know if Apple appears to have an intellectual property license already with these folks or not, but this thing could turn into a quagmire real quick. And you got some small guy that's developing an app, he's making a few $100. Some company says, hey, you're going to pay us $10,000 a year for a license to do this in-app purchasing. You know, it's going to kill him. This patent law is beyond out of control.
Yeah, there are certain things that shouldn't be patented, that's for sure.
Well, someone years ago thought it up. I don't know when this patent was filed specifically, but it's pretty nuts. Well, let me look here. What else I got in my stack? They're saying there's going to be no LTE in iPhone 5, and that Apple's going to be adding Sprint and T-Mobile to the companies that are going to be able to sell iPhones. I think that's a big mistake, not having LTE in the iPhone. Must be there's not enough room in the box or in the phone to do it.
Either that or power issues.
Well, yeah, I had heard that the main reason that they aren't going to do that is because it's still not going to be fully deployed as far as that technology in that time frame.
Right.
So it's still early days for the LTE standard out there.
So does that mean that I should wait and buy an iPhone 4 now instead of a 5, or just keep my 3GS?
Now that's what I was saying. Now
that's an interesting question. Yeah.
I'm due for an upgrade. I've got a 3GS and I thought, okay, so do I make the jump to Verizon when it comes out on iPhone 5 and get LTE? And now that that's not going to be available, okay, which way do I go? You know, the thing that sucks about Verizon is I'm on the phone a lot and I'm also doing texting or I'm on the web. You can't do that with a Verizon phone. So that's the only thing as much as I hate AT&T, if they come out with Sprint, I guess there's always Sprint, but I don't know. Sprint would be any better than AT&T.
Here's the bigger question on this. Well, and I know yours is probably the same as mine, and that is we're still on unlimited plans.
No.
And by being on unlimited plans, once our 2-year contracts are up and we don't change anything on our 2-year contract, will we still have an unlimited plan, or will we be pulled to a tiered data plan?
Well, I don't ever go over. I've never went over on my iPhone. I look at how much I use, and I use more on my iPad than I use on my iPhone. I use maybe two gigs maybe a month on my iPhone. It's pretty hard to use 5. You know, be honest with you, I have a eVideo card that I one time ran for 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, and still only did like 4.8 megs, and it was my primary connection point for a month. So it's very, in all honesty, I think it's very hard right now, at this very moment, to go over 5 gigs. Now, that could change here real quick.
If you're
doing
a lot of video and stuff, then it's going to go over.
Yeah, I think so too. But I also sync my phone a lot as well.
But still, that's the only reason why I would probably stick with the 3GS is if I don't lose that plan, and then once an iPhone with 4G. Or maybe switch to Android or whatever. Then I switch to a new plan, new rules.
Yeah, I think we're all just gonna be living with those rules one way or the other here for a while.
Yep.
Well, I don't know. I just and just waiting to see what the iPhone 5 has. I really want to upgrade, but I'm at the I just kind of between it. They normally do it in the spring, you know? So I was thinking, okay, yeah. April, May, I can upgrade my phone. And then they went and pushed it to the fall. I'm like, you know, yeah, the 1 year I want to upgrade, I can't because they haven't put stuff out. Hey, what do you think about this whole thing with Sony and the PlayStation Network and their the mess they have over there?
Yeah.
Xbox is definitely getting some sales, Rob. Xbox, yeah, I heard they're flying off the shelves.
Yeah, I hate to see this, though, because, I mean, it's like, you know, it's not good for the industry to have a failure like this. I mean, it's not good for anybody.
Well, I said on my show it was a 12-step plan for gamers that are addicted to their consoles and playing live. I actually got some negative feedback from one of my listeners where I said the gamers should go out and smell the roses a little bit. But, yeah. You know, I had, you know, when I, after 9/11, when I went to off to war, first 76 days, I had no internet connection. Now, can you imagine me going without internet for 76 days?
I can't.
It was torture for about a week or 2 weeks. And then I, you know, it's like that habit was kind of broke. And ever since then, it's actually changed my net habits a lot. It's interesting to be offline for a length of period like that. Now, it wasn't fun catching up with the 8,000 emails I had in my inbox when I finally did get connectivity. But, I don't know. This whole thing with Sony, it's and what's really sad is I guess it was easy. They say the hack was not complex. Sony says it was very complex and hard. But third-party sites are saying they had open servers, unpatched. They, you know, people were using off-the-shelf scanning tools in order to get in. And if it was that open, then they deserve every hack that they got. And it's a big slap in the face to their network administrator. Someone, I'm sure, is going to get fired over there. The Japanese don't take failure easily. And you know, some guys, if it's this much of money involved, heads are going to roll. I can't even imagine that. Oh, knowing the Japanese culture, I'm going to tell you, this is beyond. Failure is not an option. And they're going to be off until at least the end of the month. Holy smacks.
Yeah, it's not good. Yeah, I just noticed that there's a Bloomberg, news that's saying that the Amazon servers were said to be used in the Sony attack.
Yeah, an S3 server was used. Interesting, yeah.
I'm not quite sure how that would work. I mean, so is it used as a proxy or something?
Well, someone set up a Unix box and used that for the, or a Windows machine. They set up something, VNC'd into it, or run their, you know, their scanning software, or launch their attacks from there. You think about it, if you tracks, you think also if it was used with the Amazon S3 server, Amazon will know who owned those and who paid for them, because it's not like you're going to load an instance without incurring a credit card fee. So maybe they'll end up catching who did it. If they did, boy oh boy, I don't want to be on the receiving end of that knock on the door. We lost Jeffrey.
Sony would be unrelenting in pursuing that one, I'm sure.
Yeah, completely unrelenting. And, you know, and here's the thing, though, that Bloomberg also said. Bloomberg said, hey, you know, Sony was targeting hackers. They were going after them heavily. You know, and they were basically, you know, they sued that George Hotz, and they went after some hackers in the UK, or not UK, but in Europe, because they were, you know, basically building applications or devices that would bypass some of the copyright control protections of the PlayStation. And so essentially Sony was being one of the most aggressive ones in that space. And, you know, so maybe, you know, people got sick of them attacking and went back after them. So, you know, you're going to start going after hackers, and you're going to start going after devs and any people that are building mods. Then you're going to upset a whole group of people who are inclined to run that kind of stuff. And, they also are, those are the type of guys that are willing to, make a statement by taking a network down or, hacking in and stealing credit card data. Now, Sony says the credit card data is still safe, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well, we talked about Chromebooks earlier, and this is a darn good reason why we're not ready for that type of situation, because your data could go down and that's it.
Well, I think anyone should know that if they have data, wherever you have it stored, you need to have it backed up a couple different places. Yeah. I go to great lengths here to protect my data, and to the point it's a little bit absurd. But, that data is pretty valuable to me.
Well, and the other part to it, too, is that there is no permanent storage.
No.
I mean, I think that's the biggest challenge. I mean, I think if you look back in time, a lot of the content creators stored film and stuff like that on physical media, right?
Yeah.
On film and tape and things like that. But you start thinking about how we all store our photos and our personal videos. They're all really in temporary storage formatted platforms.
Yep.
So you're always going to have to be moving this stuff around.
Yep.
In mm-hmm. order to keep it.
I had to, when I was running my bulletin board, when I shut it down, I saved a hard drive. And that hard drive now will not boot up. But I had backup on CDs and DVDs and some other locations. And
well,
so
those things don't last forever either.
No. So I had a guy that was looking for a specific file. He'd lost one file. No one else had it. He knew that I ran some of the same stuff he did. And he was begging me, you got to go into your archives. You got to find me this file. If I don't find this file, I'm dead. And so I went, and he couldn't reboot his machine because something, whatever it was loaded as a driver or whatever. And so I went looking, and I dug for about an hour and finally found the disk that had the file that he was looking for. And it was in a zip file. You're thinking, oh my God, you open up a zip file. Is this thing going to be corrupted? You don't know if what you're going to get, right? And it opened and it was fine. But it just, it also made me look back, as I've got 5 bags of CDs back here. And I'm thinking, okay, time to move those on to some newer generation hard drives. And,
well, that, and plus those read-write CDs only really have a 10-year life.
Right.
I mean, just sitting there, not using them, they're going to degrade to the point where they're unreadable. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't realize that.
Yep.
But that's what happens to those things.
But, this guy's basically, he actually sent me a PayPal for sending him a single file, and so I was glad I ever helped the guy out. But it's one of those situations where, I went, oh yeah, I got that hard drive. And I grabbed the hard drive up and I'm like, oh, that's a pretty old model. Let me put it in my, I don't have that connection anymore. All right, let me use my little adapter kit. And it doesn't recognize it. And I can hear it running, but I can't, So I had one of those little dock things that would, work, but it didn't want to work. So you're like, oh, I guess that one's gone.
Yeah, so, lost all that data.
Yeah, but
It's funny that a year ago we found an old machine with an MFM hard drive.
Oh my God!
And we loaded that up. We turned it on and it loaded up without a problem. And then you have hard drives that just they could be state of the art. And 2 months ago we took them out of a machine, put them into another machine, and all of a sudden they're not working at all. And it's just really funny, but. And even with the CDs, it was the CDs had a 20-month shelf life that they found out after a while.
Well,
before they started to degrade.
Well, they start degrading immediately, but they figure about you have at the most 10 years.
Yeah. And I remember pulling out CDs out of my CD portfolio. The big portfolio as an IT person, I'd always carry with all the operating systems and office programs.
No
and
one
stuff
does that,
like that
anymore.
No, but I'd pull out a CD that I'd need, and all of a sudden I put it in, and it's not working anymore. It's just like,
It is kind of funny where we've come and where we're, where we're headed. And I'm looking, I can free up some storage space. Let me just copy those to a drive that's $94, It's mm-hmm. funny. We used to put it on CDs because it was too expensive to keep it on a hard drive.
Yeah, exactly.
How far we have
come. The hard drives weren't that big, right?
Right.
So, And then also the 3.5-inch disks. I've got a bunch of those in a couple of storage boxes of old files on those. You know the 1.44 megabyte,
yep,
disks that we always use.
Oh my God!
You know, I mean, a lot of the computers now they don't even have those drives.
Well,
anymore.
They don't actually. And I, from time to time, I for some consulting I do, I have to use some test equipment that has no. They basically, the machines still have a floppy drive in them. Because these machines are $150,000, $200,000. They don't get replaced. So just finding 3.5s to stick in the machine to save the data, then you have to, thank God they still sell a USB 3.5 plug-in. You can run that and get the data off onto a hard drive. But it is kind of funny.
FireWire.
We're moving towards not even having CD drives in computers. So.
What were you saying, Jeffrey?
In the last week, the one thing I was trying to find was a computer that would have a FireWire port or an Express Card port, so I could put in a FireWire card, so I could run a DV camera to do some of the video that I was doing at Interop this last week, and that was even a challenge.
Yeah.
Which is why I ended up going with the MacBook Pro, was because a lot of companies are abandoning FireWire. And they're abandoning the Express Card port for something like eSATA or I don't know, something in the future. And even the cameras are getting rid of the DV ports. The one thing I was looking for was a way to do HDMI, to do just HDMI to USB in, just to have something. And they didn't, nothing out there just yet, but I know it's coming around the pike.
Black magic. You got to go buy your $300 converter.
Yeah, and then I think that the next thing that we're gonna, you know, we're moving into now is the USB 3.0 standard, which could ultimately be the replacement for FireWire. So that's what I'm thinking is going to wind up happening.
I think ultimately we'll have to see where it all shakes out. But it's true, you know, everyone when we were at NAB, they had a 1x8 switcher. It's gonna be $1,000 and take an HDMI in, and I'm like, wow, that's cool. And it was big. I just couldn't believe that they were doing a run HDMI in. So I'm just wondering, at what point does the real expensive SDI, because a lot of these cameras now have HDMI out. So, you know, that used to be a taboo. You could never find gear that would take an HDMI input. Now it's just the opposite. That's the only thing that's coming out. So that's what's going to replace FireWire from a USB standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Okay. I mean, so you think that the HDMI will replace even be an option to USB 3.0?
I think you're going to see cameras, webcams coming out that have HDMI connectors on them, quite honestly.
Hmm.
That's what I'm fully expecting. But because, you know, all the cameras you buy now have an HDMI, most of them have an HDMI jack on them. Is that what you found, Jeffrey?
Yeah, I just purchased a Canon HFR21, which is what I use to go to all the vendors and do the recording, because I needed something with an optical zoom in it. And it didn't have any DVI. It had the HDMI out. I had the dual SD card option. So then that's the real selling points for me. But yeah, nothing. I looked at the DVI stuff. I couldn't find anything that was captivating to purchase. I mean, I might as well just go up on eBay and buy something used for now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what you guys are talking about more is kind of live video, right?
Not right.
So much a data connection to transfer files back and forth. Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say earlier, Rob, you had mentioned that you were thinking about upgrading your webcam. Got to find out what all the porn people are using. Those are, you know, that's the, those are, believe it or not, they got the best cameras. They got the best webcam setups. And I have no idea what they're using, to be honest with you. But that seems...
Not a problem, Todd. I'll just reach out to a couple of my long, long lost friends that happen to be pornographers. Yeah.
Well, when you're asking him those questions, find out, because I don't have any of those friends. Hey guys, we've been an hour 30 here, so I'm going to wrap this up for the sake of keeping the file size to a manageable 1 gig size.
Speaking of which,
manageable. Yeah.
The if you guys, those of you that have been watching today, thanks for hanging out with us. And we hope that you, if you have comments, geeknews@gmail.com is my email address. Again, geeknews@email address. The show outline is 619-342-7365. And of course, Jeffrey, they can find you over at geekazine.com. Yeah. Tell them about your
geekazine.
Show.
Geekazine.com. I've this next week, if you're interested in virtualization, cloud companies, we got a couple really cool videos, one from an 18-year-old that created some motion glasses that can control a keyboard or a mouse. We got a video for Spiceworks for all you IT people that are looking for an asset tracking system that's absolutely free. We got that at the special media feed. Of course, the Geekazine Weekly Podcast, 5 Tech Things You Should Know About. Just go over to techpodcast.com and you'll see all the videos, including the day in tech history.
And Rob?
Probably the best thing is to keep up with ZuneInsider.com. And I do have, you know, my Twitter feed at Rob Greenlee. You can follow me on there. I post in there quite a bit. And we just launched a new exclusive podcast with the How Stuff Works folks called Stuff to Make You Smarter. You can only get that on the Zune platform if you're a big follower of the How Stuff Works folks. And they're cool podcast. This is a brand new one. They've only had 3 episodes now, but go check that one out.
Just also too, folks, if you want now, the Tech Podcast Network's listing over on iTunes has been updated. We now have an updated network page over there. You can search for any of our shows, and then you'll see at the very top, you'll see basically a link up there. It says Tech Podcast Network. You click on that. We're going to be going through a couple of phases on that page. We're working towards having a higher level working relationship with Apple on those specific network pages, and we'll be talking more about that as that progresses. But for at least now, you can find all the shows that are not currently part of any other network on the Tech Podcast Network page on iTunes. Of course, you can find the majority of the shows on Zune as well. Matter of fact, Robin, you and I probably should have a talk after the show. But otherwise, hey, thanks for hanging out with me, and thanks for being here today and watching the show. We'll see you. Won't be another show next Saturday. I'll be actually on an airplane heading back to Honolulu, so there'll be no Saturday Morning Tech Show next week. But you can also definitely check out the Gadget Professor. You can check out Robot Underpants. Episode number 2 will be coming out Monday, and of course, I'll be with you for 2 shows next week as well with Geek News Central. So check out all the great content here at geeknewscentral.com. We want to thank you all for hanging out with us today. Until next time, aloha.